This is Audible.
Dreamspinner Press presents Dirty Laundry by Rhys Ford. Narrated by Greg Tremblay. Chapter 1. I hate little girls. Hands down, they are secret vessels of Satan, and probably rule their own special circle of hell, reserved for people who abandon dogs by the sides of the roads and assholes who molest innocent children. Or it could be that I was bitter about running my fucking ass off down a back alley with a rabid poodle slung in a baby carrier across my belly, while a pack of frothing fighting dogs ripped the shit out of my jeans. While I didn't really hate little girls, particularly the little girl who had hired me to rescue her dog, I was getting kind of sick of learning to navigate through Los Angeles's back alleys. I knew she was trouble as soon as she walked through my door, wearing a deep red velvet dress with more white ruffles on its hem and sleeves than a wedding cake. Ava Hernandez was an angelic portrait of sweet innocence, with fine mahogany hair, luminous liquid brown eyes, and a chipped front tooth. In about 10 years, her father would probably be sitting out on the porch guarding his daughter's virtue with a double-barreled shotgun. Actually, he should have been there with that damned shotgun to take out the asshole who made her cry, because her face was wet with tears when she placed a chipped pink porcelain pig on my desk and declared that she was there to hire me. And if the pig wasn't enough, it was joined by a slightly melted chocolate bar and a bright purple toy unicorn with a curled rainbow mane. I was doomed from the start. She had a sad tale to tell, and I was the only guy man enough to help her. A couple of gangbangers stole Ava's poodle mix, Pookie, and she was determined to get her dog back. She knew where they lived, a bad section of street a little bit away from her house, but the cops weren't too interested, and animal control had been less than helpful. Loaded for bear with her bus pass and her entire savings, she dug through the internet for a private investigator, dressed in her Sunday best, and rode the metro to hire me. Not bad for a 9-year-old with a net worth of $3.51. I admired her bravado. Then I dialed her mother to come pick her up. I took the case, for the cost of the chocolate bar. I gave Ava back the pig and the unicorn. It seemed like the right thing to do at the time. Now, in the middle of a warm Los Angeles night, being herded by the savage growls behind me, I was beginning to think I should have held on to the unicorn. "Bobby, where the fuck are you?" I was shouting into the air. Fucker was nowhere to be seen. He was supposed to have stayed behind the house, so I'd have an easy escape. Climbing over the rickety wooden slat fence, I had spotted Pookie, holed up in a small plastic kennel, the type someone would use to cart a small cat back and forth to the vet. There were other broken plastic transport boxes keeping her company on the patio, but what worried me was across the yard, a more substantial bank of kennels made of chain-link fences and concrete floors. And each bay was occupied by a thick-necked, over-muscled fighting dog. People who raise dogs to fight should be shot. Men who steal a little girl's dog to bait a fighting dog should die the slowest, most torturous death possible. Their skin should be separated from their flesh with an air hose through minute slits, and then have water from the Salton Sea injected slowly into the cavities while someone rips off strips of duct tape from their balls. That's just off the top of my head. I was sure I could come up with something more concrete if given a little time. Okay, I might have borrowed that death from Jay's overactive imagination, but it popped into my head once I saw the dogs. Whoever turned them into vicious animals needed killing, if Pookie didn't get us killed first. Before my partner, Ben, killed my lover, Rick, and shattered my life and body in a hail of bullets, I shared a townhouse with Rick's small dog. He'd been a quiet, fluffy thing with bulging eyes and a discerning palate, We'd come to an agreement of sorts. I wouldn't let Rick put bows on the top of his head, and he didn't chew up anything I owned. I called him Ragmop too often to actually remember his real name. He'd been one of the many things Rick's parents took with them when I was lying on a hospital bed fighting for my life. Well, what I had left of my life after they removed any sign of his existence from our place. It was bad enough that Ben killed him. I could have done without them erasing him completely. Now, I'd be lucky if the dognapper's mutts didn't finish the job Ben had started. But at least I'd fulfill the promise I made to my current lover, Jay. I wasn't getting shot at. Or I'd planned on fulfilling that promise until the shooting started. There was a hell of a lot of shooting going on, and the popping noises I was beginning to hear were loud, rapping sounds bouncing through the street. Somewhere, I had taken a wrong turn. Pookie was not helping. Her ears flew up and hit my face with every stride I took, sometimes blinding me with white fuzz. Circling through the neighborhood led me back to the wide street where I'd expected to find Bobby's truck. The dogs skittered around the corner, their claws scrabbling to gain purchase on the broken sidewalk. A rough cinderblock wall held promise. If anything, it was solid enough to keep the mutts from chewing my ass off. My knees struck the wall as I swung up, my muscles going numb when I hit. The uneven blocks dug through my jeans and scraped my skin, turning my knees into hamburger. I'd take inventory later. Between the dog struggling against my chest and the bloodthirsty howls at my back, I had better things to worry about than whether or not I'd look like a piece of road rash once I got out of there. The wall was covered in dank black lichen along its prickly flat surface and thick with Los Angeles traffic dust. The mold made it difficult to get a purchase on the wall, and more than once I felt my sneakers slip when I tried to get a better hold on the ridge. Someone had begun to shout, and it was getting louder and more incessant. Ignoring everything but the dog strapped to my chest, I heaved myself up and bit through the pain arching through my shoulders. Heaving my weight up, I finally got a foot onto the wall's lip and balanced precariously on the wide cinderblock ledge. Pookie twisted in her holder, throwing me off balance, and I fell, right through the thick plastic sheeting draped over a ramshackle carport's support beams. Pookie yelled her displeasure and tried to snatch my nose off of my face, but I kept her steady, cupping her wriggling body against my chest with one hand. I'd already eaten the chocolate bar, or I'd have been sorely tempted to toss her back into the garage and let her work out her own escape. The dogs barking furiously on the other side of the wall were the least of my problems. I knew the smell coming up from the thick foliage. It was a sweet, sticky odor, reminiscent of days I'd spent in college, trying to clear my head after a long day of classes. Whatever strain the grower was producing, it was epic in its sugary scent, and the plants were practically opaque with resin-rich clusters. My sneakers stuck to the floor when I began threading through the pot plants toward the torn plastic I'd come in through. Working my body through the opening, I spotted a gate and sprinted through a barricade of cast-off household items blocking my path down the side yard. My fingers were on the latch when my luck ran out. Lights flared on in the house and poured through the grime of closed louvers. To make matters worse, flares of red and blue lights were sparkling the sky, casting up an ominous fireworks show. The bottoms of my sneakers were now covered in enough resin to make a hash ball, and I had a white poodle mix dangling from a baby carrier across my belly. If I were still a cop, I'd haul me in just on general principle. Things got worse when a bullet went whizzing by my head, and the wooden gate in front of me grew an extra peephole near my shoulder. Another few pops and bullets hit the supporting cinderblock post, sending rocky shards into my face. Not being overly stupid, I didn't need to see who was shooting at me, not when valuable seconds could be spent getting behind a thick cement wall that could take a blast from any street-legal weapon. The latch was locked, but I was motivated. Wrenching it open, I tore it from its hinges. I slammed the gate open and rushed through, hoping the piles of discarded toilets, engine blocks, and furniture would keep my pursuer occupied for a few minutes. Or at least enough time for me to disappear down the street. Still, I wasn't all that convinced I was free and clear of getting shot that night. Jay would have my damned dick for Tige if I got shot again. He'd all but threatened to skin me if I came home with more holes than I'd left with. Pookie twisted halfway around in her harness when I broke through, and her snapping, tiny teeth were hell-bent on piercing my nostrils. Come on, dog, I'm trying to rescue you here. Give me a fucking break. I took a few strides forward when a gruff voice screamed at me in a rough Spanish I couldn't follow. I didn't know him, but judging by his pissed-off face, I guess he owned the lush greenery I had trampled through. While my Spanish was failing me, I did, however, understand the semi-automatic he pointed at my face. With only a couple of feet separating us, chances were, even if he was the shittiest shot in the world, I was going to lose my face. He came up to my upper arm and sported an impressive thatch poking out from under each armpit. The rest of him was shorn clean of hair, with only a whimper of a scrawny mustache over his pierced upper lip. Dressed in a odd combination of bright white socks, flip-flops, and long cargo shorts barely hanging onto his skinny hips, his attire was made less laughable by the badly inked off-blue tattoos scrawled over his torso, neck, and face. He was a snarling bantam, the kind of man who really deserved to own Pookie, since they seemed to share the same personality. If it wasn't for the fact that I was pretty sure he would use Ava's white poof of doom as a silencer for the enormous gun he held in his hand, I'd have handed the mutt over and wished him the best. But he had other plans. Apparently, he didn't need no stinking silencer, poodle or not. I'm a-gonna shoot you, mother! Guys always have to talk when they're trying to shoot you. There are some exceptions. My police partner Ben did no talking when he riddled me and my lover Rick with bullets from his service piece as we left a restaurant. I'm sure he did plenty of talking at some point, just not to me, since he ate his own gun shortly after killing Rick and damning me to a life of nerve-seizing scar tissue. I never did get the chance to ask him why. In the case of the shaven-head, hairy pit rooster with a handgun masquerading as a cannon, I wasn't going to stick around to listen to his threats or reasons on why I should let him fill me full of holes. Besides, there was that promise to Jay that I wouldn't get shot again. And I had a serious ass-kicking to give Bobby once I found him. It was one thing to jack a friend by leaving him in a club, but it's quite another to ditch him while he was nipple-deep in a pot farm after pulling a poodle out of death row solitary. Not getting shot did seem like my first priority. However, ass-kicking seemed like it would be more fun. No one really expects another guy to kick them in the balls. It's a time-honored agreement between men. Thou shalt not emasculate the cock and scrotum. I, however, never claimed to be a gentleman, so my foot went up and scored a long goal shot down center field. Then I did the sensible thing. I ran. Unfortunately for me and Pookie, running seemed to come with a new complication. One of the biggest shepherds I'd ever seen outside a horror flick. Sadly, even though my Lilliputian terrorist was writhing on the floor, cupping his own goods, and I thought I was possibly home free, the large canine had other plans. It was huge, much larger than the ones I'd avoided in the alleyway. I could have stayed and admired it. Sleek and wolfish, the dog was a masterful specimen of whatever hellhound breed it belonged to. It also seemed more than willing to take up the task of riddling me full of holes, using his teeth instead of the mutant ninja pygmy's gun. I ran harder. By no means am I graceful. Not ballet graceful, and certainly not the slinky, bend-in-half-backward graceful Jay seems to be able to pull off. But in situations like these, grace hardly mattered. Stamina. I had stamina. I could go rounds with Bobby in a boxing ring, mostly dodging his cement-like fists before they pounded into my body, but still, I had stamina. It was the name of the game, outlasting one's opponent. Also speed. That's never something to laugh at. Speed was key. Whoever said knowledge is half the battle did not have a roided-up wolf dog chewing on their ass. Knowledge gave me jack shit in this instance. Fucking jack shit. My heart pounded, and for some reason the scar tissue along my rib cage decided right then and there it needed to perform an origami maneuver to curl itself into a crane, or maybe it was a bunny. Either way, it was starting to hurt, and Pookie chose that moment to begin twisting around to break free of the harness. Sharp teeth on the back of my thigh tore straight through my jeans, giving me further incentive to quicken my pace. My back pocket went next, along with another piece of skin. The ripping pain under the rise of my ass ached more than my side, and I kicked out, breaking my stride long enough to fight the dog off. I heard a yelp and kept running, praying my knees would hold out despite the angry stabbing pains kicking up my thighs. Mr. Bald Rooster must have recovered somewhat, because a trash can next to me sparked and shot backward, a smoking black hole through its battered metal walls. Another blast took out a piece of wooden fence, and I ducked, only catching a few of the wooden shards across my neck and face. Pookie screamed her defiance at the dog chasing me, speaking in an ancient poodle tongue that I'd have liked to imagine insulted its mother and possibly cursed its shriveled dick. Then she bit my chest, scoring a hit through my t-shirt, and I knew she was only egging the dog on to take me down. A few feet in front of me lay a desert of tarmac, and a tremor of fear tickled into my balls. The tight alley broke apart into a double lane of black asphalt, and I'd be out in the open, where the dog could maneuver around and circle me. My only hope was to hug the fences along the sidewalk and pray to get hit by a bus or possibly a falling satellite. I'd take either one, since it would mean I'd be taking Pookie with me. I was a little bitter about the blood trickling down my belly. My daring escape came to a screeching halt when the street I'd turned down lit up in a dance of red and blue. Slamming to a stop, my hands caught air just as the dog behind me caught up with me. Its teeth found their mark again, digging into my thigh, and I howled, drowning out the cop ordering me to my knees. I recognized Bobby and his truck, silhouetted against the patrol car's headlights. And from the way his hands were pulled behind his back, he seemed to have a halfway decent enough excuse for not being where I'd left him. Rough hands grabbed my shoulders and forced me down, jostling Pookie. She snapped at a cop's hands, raking her teeth over his fingers. Screaming obscenities at my head, the cop backhanded me like I'd been the one to bite him, and I sensibly fell over. The asphalt grabbed my naked thigh and hip, scraping me raw. As if auditioning for a talent show, Pookie popped out of the harness like a greased pig, shooting out and landing a few feet away. Barking happily, she squatted in the middle of the road and peed, wagging her tail at the dog who'd been chasing me down the alleyway. The same dog I'd kicked straight in the head apparently seemed to be wearing an LAPD canine unit jacket. It was still huge, more fur, teeth, and muscle than should be allowed on a dog. And he trotted over to sit attentively at another cop's side, no sign of his previous aggression apparent in his relaxed wiggling as the cop patted him. Within seconds, my arms were twisted behind my back and cuffs were snapped over my wrist before I could protest. A gust of cool wind blasted up the crack of my ass, and I could have sworn the dog's muzzle curled into a wicked grin as he dropped what looked like pieces of my underwear right at Pookie's fluffy white feet. The bitten cop leaned over and spoke, his words a malevolent curdle of a whisper, filled with an awe-inspiring disgust I would have admired if I hadn't been the one on my knees. "Man, what kind of sick fuck steals a little dog?" Chapter 2. Some men are sexier when they're angry. Apparently, my lover Jay was one of those men. My calling him down to a police station at 4 a.m. to bail out his boyfriend, and said boyfriend's best friend, should have been considered a favor to all of the women and gay men who were in the station that night. I know I certainly enjoyed the sight of him stalking back and forth as I was being led into the holding bay. I wasn't going to like what he had to say to me, but still, I'd have had to have been a dead man not to enjoy the view. His black hair was rumpled, sticking up slightly in front, and his sleepy, hooded brown gaze flirted between sensual fire and feral iciness. His toes were bare, sticking out of a pair of black flip-flops, and the white t-shirt he wore looked like one of mine, a bit too large for his slender frame. A pair of ratty jeans, barely held together by a whisper and a few threads, were stretched tight across his ass when he shoved his hands into his front pockets. I should have gotten a get-out-of-jail-free card just for getting that ass into the station. His face, like his ass, was a thing of beauty. A plump, succulent mouth set beneath high cheekbones and long-lashed almond eyes. The sight of his canines chewing on his lower lip evoked a lot of memories of that mouth and those teeth, gnawing on sensitive stretches of my body. More than one pair of eyes followed his progress back and forth in the waiting area, and I caught a very macho-looking cop dropping his gaze to the tight plumpness of Jay's rear. The cop bristled when I grinned at him, and a red flush crept up from his cheeks and over his ears. Jay saw my smirk, and his mouth thinned into a disapproving line. No, my hot, sexy boyfriend was not amused. Not in the slightest. A wall of bars separated us from the waiting area, and there was only one other man in line with us. The guy's suit was wrinkled, and he smelled like burnt vodka. A thick brush of gray whiskers covered his movie star chiseled chin and cheekbones. He looked like someone I should know, but I couldn't place his face. Blustering, he shoved past us and stomped over to the outtake clerk. Whoever he was one of three reasons the outtake window was open. Bobby and I were the other two. Sometimes it's good to be an ex-cop. Even if most of the boys in blue weren't too happy about us waving the rainbow flag, we were still their brothers. Okay, Bobby was still their brother. I was that second cousin once removed that everyone had to invite to the wedding or else there'd be talk. The outtake window was manned by a foul-tempered bear of a civil servant, who seemed to take great delight in very slowly handing over the man's personal effects. I didn't have high hopes he would be any happier to see us when we finally got to the window. It was too early in the morning for him to be there, and by the sounds of his terse, biting questions to the man in the suit, we were all lucky he hadn't come to work with a bottle of water for each one of us and a hyped-up taser.
Hey, your boy's here.
Like me, Bobby had retired from the force. Unlike me, he'd not done it openly gay and in a hail of bullets, but served out his time before coming out of the closet. It had shocked me to find out he played on my team. Muscular and rugged, he'd seemed like the proto-cop when he worn the badge. With it off, he was making up for lost time, cutting a swath through the hordes of twinks who liked an older man with a bit of silver at his temples, and enough bulk to arm-curl a couple of industrial microwaves. He'd also been my sanity while I recovered from my partner's shooting, and now he seemed to be cruising my boyfriend. Stop checking out Jay's ass. I didn't fear Bobby poaching Jay. They had a decent enough relationship. Prickly at times, but mostly solid. Still, I had to give at least a token protest of Bobby's lechery.
Are you sure you're ready to get out of here?
Bobby nudged me with his shoulder, inching me forward.
Could have made some new friends in there.
We'd been given a separate cell, farther away from the general riffraff, but there were still grumbles when we'd been led down the row toward our freedom. A skinny crackhead dressed in a purple spangled dress seemed mighty interested in seeing if he could suck my jeans off of me. But since the police dog already took care of that, I graciously declined. You'll be lucky if you get to keep the one friend you have now, asshole, I grumbled. Shuffling forward, I approached the window when a rookie buzzed the other guy out.
Which one are you? The guy behind the window growled at me. McGinnis or Dawson?
McGinnis? I took the manila envelope he handed me, opened it, and signed off on the line, assuring the LAPD that I was getting back everything I'd had in my possession when the cops brought me in. The bag held nearly everything I'd come with, except for the dog. She'd been sprung nearly as soon as we crossed the threshold of the police station. All I had left of her was Ava's smile, gashes on my hand, and the baby carrier I'd borrowed from Claudia's daughter-in-law. If I'd had a lint brush on me, I could have gathered up all the fur Pookie left behind and made another dog. Luckily, the carrier was machine washable. Passing through the gated door, I was glad to re-enter the real world, and suddenly the fatigue hit me. My legs were rubbery, overextended from the long sprint down the alleyway, and then the punctures in my skin began to ache. I wanted to get home, crawl into bed, and pull Jay on top of me, preferably to be woken up sometime in the afternoon by the promise of a cold beer and hot pizza. Or maybe a cold beer and hot sex. It would all depend on what Jay's schedule looked like. From the look on his face, I'd be lucky if he still gave me a ride home. Are you okay? Jay looked like he was hovering between punching me for getting hauled into the station and giving me a kiss, something he'd never have done in public a few months ago. Either would cause a scene, and Kim Jae-min wasn't one for scenes. He also had a wicked right hook, and I was pretty certain that would have won out if we'd been alone. Yeah, I'm okay. I touched his arm lightly, twisting to show him the gauze and tape covering my thigh. I got all my shots and everything. My jeans were a loss, and I'd tossed out my underwear. There was nothing much left of them after the canine cop got through with them, and they'd begun to bunch up against my balls. I asked the dog's handler if he wanted them as a trophy, and he'd laughed, saying I wasn't the first one. Draven had given a reverse wedgie. I'd had to wear my torn jeans out, hoping the bandages gave me enough cover to hide anything I'd get arrested for. The bantam gangster hadn't been so lucky. One of Draven's co-workers had taken him down in the alleyway, ripping him down to the bone. Considering he'd tried to empty his gun into my head, I wasn't going to send him a get-well card. I'm glad you're fine, Jay leaned in so he could whisper into my ear, because I'm going to fucking kill you when we get home. What the hell were you two thinking? Look, I know this wasn't the smartest thing. I stole a look at Bobby, who was still in the outtake cell. We didn't think it would get so big. Cole, how many police stations do you have to get dragged into? Sarcasm cuts deep when sharpened with disgust. And in the hour between me calling Jay and being released, he'd taken his to a whetstone of mammoth proportions. Is it like some quest the two of you have? Do they give those, what are they called, badges? Do they give those out for this sort of thing? Jay, we didn't mean for this to happen. We were getting sidelong glances from the clusters of cops around us. Swear to God, it was supposed to be a simple go in and grab the dog. Yeah, I know. He rattled the keys in his palm and nodded toward my back. The clang of the barred door was ominous, a rattling metal screech announcing Dawson's release. His heavy tread squeaked across the linoleum floor toward us, and Jay shot him a watery grin over my shoulder. Bobby's done. Let's go home. It was still pitch black outside, but the liquid stink of a Los Angeles morning was already rising up from the streets. A rotary cleaner chugged past us, spurting out lukewarm suds to wash oil and soot from the road. The foam slunk down to the curbside, a frothy curl of dirt and black specks. Jay chirped open my Rover and dangled the keys over my hand, letting them drop into my palm when I opened my fingers for them.
Hey, I want to see if I can get my truck back. That's the detective there. Just give me a few minutes to schmooze him.
Bobby looped an arm over Jay's shoulder and gave him a quick half-hug.
Thanks. Thanks for coming to get us, man. I appreciate it.
I answered for both of us. Sure, no problem. We'll be by the car. I was already talking to Bobby's back. A broad wall of muscle built up from years of kicking bad guys' asses and knocking lesser mortals about in a boxing ring. Jay walked over to my Rover. His long legs ate up the distance to the car with a few strides, and I hurried to catch up with him, wincing when my leg protested the rapid movement. The tape tugged on what little leg hair I had, and the gauze stuck to my wound ripped off on my skin, starting a slow, seeping leak into the bandage. "Hey!" I caught up with him at the Rover's passenger side and placed my arms on either side of his waist, trapping him against the car. "I'm sorry, I am. It really was not supposed to go down like this. How are we supposed to know we were walking into a drug sting tonight? It got out of control, okay?" He tilted his head back and exhaled, pursing his lips to kiss the air above him. He scrubbed at his face with his hands, and when he lowered his chin to look at me, there was a shimmer of wet in his eyes. He wouldn't cry. Not here, not out in the open. But it was there, lingering on the razor edge of his control. There was a break in his voice when he spoke, a painful crack of emotion in his sultry rasp. "I get scared when the phone rings and the ID says it's a police station." His voice was breaking, and my heart shattered under the grief and fear in his words. "There's been too many times, too much blood for me to not think something bad has happened. So can you please not do this again? Please?" I shouldn't have taken him in my arms, not with his aversion to showing affection and his fear of being outed as a gay man, but in the middle of the parking lot, listening to Bobby try to charm his truck out of impound, it seemed like the right thing to do. Typically, he fought me, a minor struggle to break free and somehow hide from my affection, but I refused to let him go. It was selfish of me. I knew it. Our sensibilities warred with one another. His instincts fought me, driven by an ingrained fear of his family's shunning. I'd already been ostracized, thrown aside by my father and the only woman I'd ever called Mom. I wanted to pull him over to my way of thinking, nearly begging him to turn his back on the single most important thing that defined a Korean man, his family. Whereas I had just found out that my mother, the woman who supposedly died giving birth to me, actually went back to Japan to have another family before dying 5 years ago. My brother Mike and I had differing opinions on that matter. He was willing to forgive and reach out to the man who called himself our half-brother. I was pretty much pissed off at everyone except for my sister-in-law, but then Maddie endorsed my father being drawn and quartered for lying to us all these years. So I wasn't exactly thrilled by the whole concept of family at the moment. I wanted Jay to be my family. I wanted both of us to go home, close the door, and lock everyone else and everything else outside. Maybe just open it up for takeaway delivery and possibly to throw out the trash. I had yet to master tossing a full bag into the dumpster behind my carport. Close, but I couldn't get enough swing to clear the arc, and the weight varied too much. That particular nirvana was never going to happen. Jay needed to roam, stretching himself out in dark places to capture them on film, and it would be impossible to keep him contained. He also knew, once he came out of the closet, that he would have no one left. No one but me. And he wasn't quite ready to trust that I'd be with him till the end of time. So I held him, smelling the sweetness of his hair and the citrus soap he used on his skin. Then resigned myself to having to let him go. "I am sorry." Repeating it seemed to help. Ghosting a kiss over his mouth, I caught the sigh he exhaled, taking his hot anger inside of me with a press of my lips. "I really am." "I know," he murmured back. Laying his forehead against my chest, Jay exhaled again. This time his shoulders relaxed and the tension slid from his spine.
"You just don't know how fucking scary it is to think something's happened to you. Even if it's just for that 1 second. It hurts so much, Ko'a. I can't take it. I don't want to take it. It's too much to ask."
Leaning back, Slightly, I cupped his face with my hands and pressed a light kiss onto the end of his nose. I promise, I am not trying to get killed, okay?
Hey, you two quit sucking face so I can get a ride home.
Bobby's shout pulled Jay back, and he stumbled, pushing at my hands when I tried to catch him. Trotting up to the rover, Bobby growled a few curse words at the detective walking up the steps to the station.
Asshole won't let my truck go. He says it's evidence.
It kind of is. My shrugging at him did not help his temper, and Bobby's nostrils flared at me. They tossed bricks of hash to the back of your truck, and then you took off.
Shit, I thought it was you jumping in,
he groused.
How the fuck was I supposed to know it wasn't?
You could have looked. Jay snorted, opening the car door.
Get in. The sooner we get you home, the sooner I can go back to bed. And Mike is starting to call me now. I am staying out of it, so when you wake up, call your brother, or I'll tie you to the bed while you're asleep and tell them to come over so he can beat some sense into you.
In the end, I didn't call Mike. I'd meant to. It was on my mental list of things to do, first thing in the morning. However, by the time I woke up, it was about noon, and I was late in opening up at the office. Jay was already gone, and Nico, his wicked black cat, already laid claim to his empty pillow. From the fishy stench of her breath when she meeped at me to wake up, I guessed Jay had fed her before he headed out for his morning assignment. It had been only a few weeks since Claudia, my office manager, was laid up by a gunshot meant for me. The doctors were giving her a 2-month recovery time. Her family gave it 5 more days before she showed up at the office with a pillbox hat and a stir-crazy look in her eyes. I was under strict orders to turn her back around and send her home. All bets were off if she showed up with a pie. Claudia's homemade pies were delicious enough to outweigh any potential damage her sons might do to me if I didn't call them immediately. Since I wasn't planning on doing anything more strenuous than sitting on a pillow to ease the ache in my thigh, I found the most comfortable pair of jeans I owned. The bite seemed healed over enough to leave off a wrapping of gauze, especially since I didn't trust myself not to tape up my leg. The canine left only light punctures, but they hurt enough to sting when the shower spray hit them. Promising myself coffee when I got the office opened, I grabbed a couple of Jay's choco pies and headed to the front of the building. Judging by the frowning, tiny, older Korean woman standing on the porch of my investigation office, paperwork was going to have to wait a little while. I'd been around Jay long enough to recognize the type of woman he called an ajuma. I'd originally thought it was a term of respect, like calling Scarlett Nuna. I learned that lesson quickly when I used the A word in her presence, and the look I got in return would have fried me like a piece of bacon if Jay hadn't laughed it off and pushed me out the door. I was then schooled on the proper use of the word, preferably when the woman in question couldn't hear it being said. One did not call a sleek, elegant transvestite like Scarlett an ajuma. No, that word was reserved for the squat cherub of a woman peering imperiously down at me from the top step of the porch. A pair of black rhinestone-studded glasses were perched low on her nose, secured from falling to the ground by a silvery crystal leash looped around her neck. More than a few strands at her temples were bright silver, but the majority of her curled helmet of hair was inky black, the same color as her heavily made-up eyes. Even through her thick glasses, I could see a hefty dose of crazy lurking in those eyes, but I opened the door for her anyway. I'd been accused more than once of having more than my own share of crazy. She might have been a bit close to the off-kilter side of mental, but by all appearances, she seemed to be holding her own. Polyester seemed to be her preferred fabric. Her bright pink pants were a few inches shorter than they needed to be, and her floral chiffon blouse was tight across her midsection, flattening her breasts until they were almost square in shape on her torso. From the wrinkles near her eyes and the grooves along her mouth, I'd have put her age at late 60s. Judging mostly by the sucking hiss of disappointment she gave me when I approached, she could have been Methuselah, and I was the reincarnation of her worthless grandson, who'd forgotten to get the dinosaurs and unicorns on the fucking ark.
Are you the detective?
Her words were rounded with a soft Korean accent, much like Jay had when he was sleepy or angry. Another telling sniff as she glanced at the thick gold watch on her wrist.
Is bad for business to open so late?
Sorry, ma'am, I had a late case last night. It's funny how an angry elderly woman immediately upped my manners to high alert. Let me get you inside and make some tea. I didn't like tea. The only reason there was tea in the office was because Jay and Scarlett drank it when they came to visit. Other than that, it was a coffee kind of place, furnished in massive vintage desks and comfortable chairs. I had stripped down the years of paint from the wood half-wall paneling when I'd bought the building, and stained it a dark cherry, varnishing it until Claudia could put her lipstick on in its shine. It was a vast, open space with a separate conference room. I liked it a lot. Claudia said it reminded her of a men's club. Scarlett, who actually sang at a gentleman's club, agreed with her. But since I was the one paying the bills, I wasn't going to change one damned thing about it.
Coffee would be better,
she muttered at me, her eyes skittering around as she took the office in.
This is suitable. It looks more like a detective than you do.
Counting to 10 worked. So did using instant Vietnamese 3-in-1 and the hot water from the spigot on the coffee maker. I made myself a double batch, filling my mug, and carefully walked a smaller mug over to the couch where she had taken roost. I placed the steaming mug on the table in front of her and sat down in the leather wing chair opposite the couch. Sipping my coffee, I let the caffeine hit my system before I felt ready enough to take her on. She had no such reservations. After tanking down a mouthful of the scalding liquid as if it was tap water, she set the mug down with a fierce thump and looked me square in the eye.
My name is Madame Son.
She drew out the U until it was almost a ghostly sound.
You should know that you are in the presence of the best fortune teller in Los Angeles, possibly even Korea, now that my Sunbae has retired.
I ranked fortune tellers up there with people who came to my door insisting on dumping a pile of dirt on my carpet to show me the vacuum that they're selling will pick it up. I couldn't have faked being impressed if she'd dropped her pants and unfurled a foot-long dick that danced and sang, "Hello, my baby." I went with a murmuring sound of mild awe. "What can I help you with, ma'am?"
"Someone is killing my clients. 3 have died so far, and from what I have seen, more will die."
The Ajuma stabbed at my arm with a bony finger, demanding my attention.
"And I want to hire you to stop them."
Chapter 3. There are an infinite number of things I know nothing about. From the existence of God to why they can't figure out a better wrapper for American cheese so I can get it all out without leaving that small strip behind. The world is a mysterious and awesome place. With this philosophy, it makes it pretty easy to be a private investigator. Usually I just push the "I believe" button when someone asks me to prove their beloved husband or wife is faithful to them, but it worked just as well for clairvoyance. At the very least, I could show her no one was dying because of her. I made Madame Park Hyunya Sun another cup of instant Vietnamese coffee and encouraged her to continue.
"It all started with Mei Choi. She was one of my regulars. Young woman, very pretty, and married to a good man."
Madame Sun's rings flashed as she wove her hand about to tell her story.
"I'd just had a consultation with Mei. It was good news, but there was a blackness around her. I didn't say anything at the time, but after she left, I was filled with a cold feeling. The next day, I saw on the news she'd been killed by a man who wanted her car." "That's unfortunate, ma'am," I said as gently as I could. "But that's not your fault. I could have warned her."
Madame Sun slammed her open hand on the coffee table, rattling our cups.
"I felt something lingering over her. I should have known. She left my salon at noon and died 20 minutes later. What kind of man would kill a woman in the daylight for her car? The policeman I spoke to on the phone told me I was crazy."
There was not a whisper from me that crazy would have been my first reaction. My second reaction, too. Instead, I just jotted a note in my steno pad to follow up on the Choi investigation. "It does sound like an accident, Madam Sun. I'll be glad to ask the police what they're doing, but I don't know how..."
"There have been two others."
She leaned forward and pinned me in place with a hard look over her glasses.
"Both dying after leaving my salon. May's death might have been unfortunate, but the others right after her? That is something dark moving against me."
I got details out of her concerning the other two deaths. Unlike Mei Choi, who'd come from Seoul a year ago, the others were Koreans who lived in America for many years. The second of Madame Sun's clients to die was Yoo Jun Lee, a housewife killed during an afternoon home invasion. Following her a few days later, Bak Bung Chol, an elderly businessman, died of an apparent heart attack in his own office. Madame Sun gave me as many details as she could, including their addresses and how long they'd been her clients.
"Have you heard anything from anyone that might lead you to believe any of your other clients are in danger?" I didn't want to open that Pandora's box, but on the far-off chance that she actually had concrete evidence of something going on, I had to ask.
"No, no, you cannot say anything. I don't want to alarm anyone."
She shook her head, and not a single strand of her hair moved, although the beads on her glasses leash jingled pleasantly.
"But, yes, I have felt that more death is coming. It is all connected to me. I know it inside of me. Please, Mr. McGinnis, these people do not deserve to die because they come to me for advice."
"No one deserves to die like that, Madam Sun," I assured her. "And no, I won't speak to any of your current clients. I just want to know if you've had anything concrete I could chase down."
"My premonitions are concrete, but I understand what you think. You are not the first one I've met who does not believe. I don't need you to believe, Mr. McGinnis. I just need to make sure that the people I advise are safe. Will you need money to begin?"
She reached into her bright pink alligator purse, and I stopped her with a shake of my head. No. Let me see if I have something to investigate first. If I have something to chase after, I'll call you and tell you what it will cost." I had no intention of charging her. It didn't sound like a conspiracy or a curse, just unfortunate circumstances arriving too close together for comfort. The case was going to be as profitable as Ava's case, but without the chocolate bar. It wouldn't cost me anything to ring up a few cops and shake out some information, and at the end of the time I spent, Madame Sun would at least feel better. Time was a small price to pay for an older woman's peace of mind, and, well, time was something I had a lot of.
"Vivian, she helps me. Call her if you need more information."
She stood up, creakily rubbing at her knee when she stepped out from around the table.
"Her number is written there, ne? My son James is outside. I do not want to make him wait too long."
I'll call you after I speak to the police, and they have something I can share." I saw her to the door, holding the screened panel open for her to pass through. She gave me a mumbled thank you, and I nodded at the middle-aged man waiting by the sedan parked at the curb. Cops don't like it when private investigators call them up and question them about their cases. Actually, no cop really likes having someone else's nose peeking over their shoulder, but a follow-up wouldn't be too out of the ordinary if I couched it as trying to calm a concerned elderly woman.
It took me about a half an hour and more than a few transfers before I found myself speaking to Dexter Wong, a detective I'd become friends with. Wong had handled the cleanup following my last case and caught the Choi investigation. When he answered the phone, he sounded slightly bemused to hear from me. A fortune teller, huh? I heard Wong tapping something against his desk. My mother goes to one. She swears the old man helps her. I figure if my mom wants to consult the I Ching, that's her business. I wear my lucky socks when I play ball. Like I can throw stones. What can I help you with? I gave him what details I had, and Wong hummed over the phone at me. I'm not looking for much. Even if you guys don't have any leads, I can tell her I spoke to you. She seems nice enough, worried about her people. I thought I'd chat you up and maybe ease some of the pressure she's feeling. No, I totally get that. I'll tell you, but the details stay between us, McGinnis, he continued after I murmured an agreement. It's down as a carjacking, but really, it's a straight-up homicide. She was shot through the open window of her Beamer while at a light. Her purse was grabbed but dumped a few feet away. Guy left the car. Shooter did it in broad daylight. Witnesses say he was average height, wearing a black tank top and jeans. Ski mask, so no one saw his face, but skin tone was tanned. Could be Asian or Hispanic descent. Happened off of Vermont, right at the edge of K-Town, so no one's talking and no one's pointing fingers. You know how it is. Yeah, I worked areas like that in patrol. Still, seems kind of over the top just to grab a purse. How old was the Beamer? New. It still had dealer plates on it. She was known for carrying large amounts of cash, but not enough to get two bullets in her face. Wong tisked. I've got a picture here. She was really pretty. Her husband's tight-lipped, but he seems upset by it when we talked to him. Still, he hasn't called me up to ask how the case is going. Could be he knows you don't have a lot to go on. I chewed on the end of my pen, then pulled it out of my mouth as if Claudia was next to me, admonishing me not to get ink on my lip. The office was too quiet without her. I was beginning to slip into the bad habit of opening up late. Maybe, but if I had a young, pretty wife shot to death, I'd be writing the cops' asses until they gave me the name of the guy so I could beat the shit out of him for it. What do you think? Was their marriage good? I poked a hole at the husband's grief. It was easier without him standing in front of me, a faceless man who possibly ordered his wife's death. Seems like it, Wong surmised. Once again, hard to tell. Both came from Seoul. He's older than she is by about 11 years, and she was young, barely 20. He works the American end of his family's import business. Choi's lived here for about 3 years, but went back over to Korea to get married. Choi? She took his name? I frowned when Wong confirmed it. That's odd. I thought most Korean women kept their names. Could be because she was living over here, acclimating and all that, he replied. Her maiden name was Gung Jun. That's about it. If I get a break in this, I'll let you know, but nothing much else going on. You got anything on the other one? Yun Jun Lee? I flipped through my notes. The third name I've got is Bak, but he was a heart attack. Someone else caught Yun Jun Lee. Wong's keyboard sounded like it was getting a workout. No, there's not much there either. Home invasion, a few blocks away from Choi's carjacking. They got some small electronics, but no cash, and they left the jewelry. Husband thinks she walked in on them. We don't have ballistics yet, but it looks like the same caliber as Choi's. 9mm, but that's common. You think anyone would look at you funny if you asked for a cross-reference between Choi and Lee? It was a long shot. There were a lot of 9mm handguns on the streets of Los Angeles, and the odds of them being the same weapon was very slim. Wouldn't hurt to ask. The lab usually looks out for this kind of thing for us, but it's hit and miss. They're overloaded. Wong cleared his throat. Look, I've got a bail. If you hear anything on your end, give me a call. If those two are connected, then we'll have something to go on. I'll look at the Madam Sun angle from my end, okay? Thanks. I owe you dinner. Can I bring my girlfriend? Wong teased. You know, so you don't get any ideas that it's a date? Sure, so long as I can bring Jay. You know, so you don't get any ideas that you actually have a chance with me, I countered, Great, now I'm gonna really be the ugliest one at the table. I'll pick up a tab and buy you a beer. I hung up after we made tentative plans for Korean barbecue. I sent Jay a text asking him about what days he was free, promising him he could pick the restaurant so long as it was Korean. Oddly enough, I wasn't quite ready to put a pin in Madam Sun's paranoid butterfly. The three deaths occurred in quick succession, spaced out over a few days, and from what I could see on an area map, very close together. It was odd for the Jacker to leave the new BMW behind, and I wondered if he'd not planned on killing Choi. Wong's eyewitness reports were pretty clear. The shooter walked up and shot Choi nearly point-blank, then booked it through K-Town's jungle of buildings. He knew she'd be there, I mused, wheeling over to the coffee machine. Someone knew her schedule. Oh, it feels more like a hit than something random. Not wanting to make a whole pot, I doctored up another cup of instant Vietnamese, then scooted across the floor to my desk. I was only able to wheel around the office when Claudia wasn't there. I'd have to break the habit before she came back, or I'd feel the flat side of her hand on the back of my head when I rolled past. Okay, so we've got a carjacking that leaves the car and only takes a purse. The back of my leg began to itch, and I lifted my leg to lightly scratch at the denim over the bandaged area. And a home invasion that leaves behind a shitload of jewels but takes what's out in the front rooms. Something stinks here, McGinnis. It got even stinkier when I heard my older brother Mike yelling my name as he came up the walk toward the office door. The porch rattled a bit from his stomping feet, and the screen door screeched in protest when he yanked it open. As usual, his hair was a prickly cactus of black spikes, and the glower on his face was an impressive display of curved lines and gritted teeth. Much like my feelings on Madam Sun predicting the future and telling fortunes, I wasn't that impressed by my older brother's displeasure. Only a few years separated us. Well, a few years and quite a few inches. Mike took after our mother, a small Japanese woman named Ryoko, our father met while stationed overseas. Stocky and broad-shouldered, Mike fended off any short jokes growing up with hard fists and an even harder head. I simply grew taller, had longer legs and could outrun him until he gave up. I might have been the only one of us to get my dad's brown hair and green eyes, but we'd both inherited his hot temper. Since I wasn't going to be running any time soon with the punctures in my thigh, Mike was going to have a distinct advantage, even if I wanted to walk away from his shit. I took the easy way out and stood up, using my height to intimidate my ruffled brother. Picking up Madam Sun's coffee cup, I turned my back on him, then hobbled over to the sink to wash up. He followed, an infuriated duckling trailing behind me.
"Why didn't you call me?"
Mike came up about a head short of being able to stare me down, but his nostrils flared with the intensity of rabid sunspots.
"I told Jay."
"Okay, let's agree on something, brother. You don't tell Jay anything." I shook off the excess water from my hands and wiped them on my jeans. I had forgotten about the dog bite on the back of my thigh, and the press of my fingers on the thin bandage nearly made me yelp. "He was nice enough to pass along the message, but he's not one of your peons. Neither am I. I'll call you when I call you."
"I wouldn't have to contact Jay if you'd return any of my calls."
Mike circled around me and helped himself to a tea bag and a cup. He filled the cup with hot water and turned around to find me already at my desk.
"We need to talk."
"We don't need to talk." Finally, turning on my computer, I waited a few seconds for it to boot up so I could begin a case file for Madam Sun. Sure, she was a free ride, but that didn't mean her case deserved any less attention. Also, Claudia would ship me to Siberia if she came back and the files weren't in order. After setting his mug down on Claudia's computer table, well out of my reach, Mike hitched himself up onto the edge of my desk and poked me in the shoulder. I flinched, the residual pain from a gunshot wound pulsing along the point of his finger, and he had the good grace to look at least slightly apologetic. I talked to